Here we have Yavaila Sach Chitulasi Vimishra Krishnangi Rain Vyadikambu Netri Punati Lokan Ubayatri Seishan Kastam Nasevata Marishyamana. In translation by Srila Prabhupada, the river Ganges, by which the king sat to fast, carries the most auspicious water, which is mixed with the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord and tulasi leaves. Therefore, that water sanctifies the three worlds, inside and outside, and even sanctifies Lord Shiva and other demigods. Consequently, everyone who is destined to die must take shelter of this river.
My God.
Okay. Let's take a second here. We can look back at the actual chapter. Of course, this is the end of the whole canto. Why not? Let's look at the whole canto and get the big picture. Even more big picture, I guess. The first canto is like a preface. It tells us who wrote the book, under what circumstances, what's the purpose, who is the audience. So the first three chapters, we have Sudha talking to the sages, and they explain their problem, that they haven't got a proper sacrifice for the Kali Yuga. And please tell us what to do. So he says that the actual solution is Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the incarnation for this age. But then they ask, and they say, well, hey, but wait a second. Vyasadeva already wrote so many books. His son, Sukadeva Goswami, was self-realized soul. So how did he get the impetus to do this? So then in 1456, there's a whole story about Vyasadeva meeting with Narada Muni, his guru, and he gave him all the impetus and the perspective to produce Srimad Bhagavatam. So at the end of the sixth chapter, Sudha Goswami tells the sages, and so Vyasadeva wrote it. He gave it to his son Sukadeva Goswami, and Sukadeva Goswami then spoke it to Maharaj Parikshit at the moment of death. And I was there, and I heard it. So, yata idam yata mati. So I shall now try to make you experience it as I experienced it. So not necessarily giving the exact same thing, but adjusting it in terms of the audience so they can actually have the experience. And for that purpose then, he says, I'll tell you the appearance of Maharaj Parikshit, his birth, and the disappearance of the Pandavas, and that's the whole ambience that motivated the production of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he starts with chapter 7, which is the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, which is the how Dronacharya threw the Brahmastra weapon at Maharaj Parikshit, and how he was saved. But then he kind of digresses. He doesn't go right away to the disappearance of the Pandavas. Maybe because it's a Purana and he sees, let me give a little more background so people can really appreciate what's happening. So then he goes ahead and gives the Kunti's prayers to asking Krishna to stay. Then he goes with Bishwadeva who's disappearing. Then finally, during this time, Maharaj Parikshit is born. Maharaj Yudhishthira does some horse sacrifices. And then finally Krishna departs for Dwarka, and he arrives in Dwarka. And these are the most rasika chapters in the first two cantos right here. Because he really talks about the Dwarka pastimes, which are superior to those of Bhishma and Kunti. Okay. Then he goes back again to his original purpose, which is the birth of Maharaj Parikshit. And Dhritarashtra quits home. Then disappearance of the Pandavas, disappearance of Krishna. So everything is taken care of pretty much. Maharaj Parikshit is on the throne, and everybody else has departed. And so for quite some time then, and then finally then we get this last section here, which is a specific background of how Maharaj Parikshit met Sukadeva Goswami, how Parikshit received the age of Kali, punishment and reward of Kali, Maharaj Parikha cursed by a Brahmin boy. Now finally we're right here, you know, the appearance of Sukadeva Goswami. And then after that, in the next canto then, we actually have the main speaker and the main audience and everybody talking and listening about the main topic. What is the duty of a man during his life, and especially the time of death? Like that. Okay. So, then, this chapter starts off, and the first few verses are continued from the last chapter. In the last chapter, of course, Maharaj Parikshit was induced by Krishna for this whole pastime of insulting Samika Rishi. Yeah. And as it's just describing that he was feeling very bad about this. You know. He was hoping that the simple reactions would come upon him immediately. You know. He was complaining that he was an unqualified person, everything else. And then at that point, it says that the news came about his death, and so immediately he took shelter. He was very fortunate. He knew what was going to happen. So he immediately went to an auspicious place. Therefore, from the very beginning, Srila Prabhupada tried to establish temples. From the very beginning, he wanted to establish auspicious places, you know, for us, dedicated to Krishna's pastimes. You know, Vastu is so important, the place. And then now it's describing more details of that place, because it's sanctified, because it's on the bank of the Jamuna, the Ganga. And so the purport then, we have it here. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Prabhupada says, Maharaj Parikshit, just after receiving the news of his death, within 7 days, at once retired from family life and shifted himself to the sacred bank of the Jamuna River. Generally, it is said that the king took shelter on the bank of the Ganges. But according to Srila Jiva Goswami, the king took shelter on the bank of the Jamuna. Srila Jiva Goswami's statements appear to be more accurate because of the geographical situation. Maharaj Parikshit resided in his capital, Hastinapur, situated near present New Delhi, and the river Jamuna flows down past the city. Yeah. Naturally, the king would take shelter of the river Jamuna because she was flowing past his palace door. As far as sanctity is concerned, now Prabhupada goes into a separate thing here. Actually, I know from my own experience that the Jamuna goes right through Delhi, you know, on the eastern side. Of course, now there's this whole program that actually she gets deviated for agricultural purposes way north of Delhi. And that what actually is being flowing in her riverbed is actually just all the desagua, all the garbage water, industrial and commercial and drain water coming off of the cities above it. So the comment is that there's not one drop of Jamuna water in the Jamuna. Of course, these rivers also flow underground. The water sinks in the ground and is moving that way too. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, the waterbed is there and there's water in it. Yeah. But if you keep on going east, maybe driving about an hour or something before you actually come to the Ganga. Yeah. So it's east of Delhi then. Okay, then Prabhupada says, as far as sanctity is concerned, the river Jamuna is more directly connected with Lord Krishna than the Ganges. The Lord sanctified the river Jamuna from the beginning of his transcendental pastimes in the world. While his father, Vasudev, was crossing the Jamuna with the baby Lord Krishna for a safe place at Gokula on the other bank of the river from Mathura, the Lord fell down in the river, and by the dust of his lotus feet, the river at once became sanctified. It is especially mentioned herein that Maharaj Parikshit took shelter of that particular river, which is beautifully flowing, carrying the dust of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna mixed with tulasi leaves. Lord Krishna's lotus feet are all always be smeared with tulasi leaves. And thus, as soon as his lotus feet contact the water of the Ganges and the Jamuna, the rivers become at once sanctified. The Lord, however, contacted the river Jamuna more than the Ganges. According to the Varaha Purana, as quoted by Srila Jiva Goswami, there is no difference between the water of the Ganges and the Jamuna. But when the water of the Ganges is sanctified 100 times, it is called the Jamuna. Similarly, it is said in the scriptures that 1,000 names of Vishnu are equal to one name of Ram, and three names of Lord Ram are equal to one name of Krishna. So a lot of Prabhupada's discussions about the Jamuna and its sanctity and how it becomes sanctified. And then there's a very nice description of this in, we have here. So can you see our desktop now? Ramananda, you can tell me if you can see it or not.
Yes, Maharaj, we can see.
Okay. So I went on the internet for rivers, and actually if you do a Google search for rivers, you get really this wonderful collection of slides. And also another one is waterfalls. You get really nice natural Dharat-roop ones. Yeah. And I get the Jamuna, a little more tropical river. But something like this, you can see it's a very confidential place to play like that. You know, very nice on the bank of a river. And then from Bodhananda Saraswati, he has his Vrindavan Dhamma Himamrita, Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati. And he's the uncle of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And when Lord Chaitanya was staying at Venkateshwar, at Tirupati, no, Rangakshetra. He was staying at Rangakshetra, as a member. And, for doing the Chaturmasya. So then two brothers, Venkata Bhat and his brother, were there, very high-class Brahmins, priests for Ranganath. And then Venkata Bhatta's son became Gopal Bhatta Goswami. So Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati was also, you know, convinced about the importance of Lord Chaitanya. So he later on wrote so many poems about Lord Chaitanya, and he also wrote Vrindavan Dhamma Himamrita, you know, which is the glories of Sri Vrindavan Dham. And he wrote what are called shatakas, Jayam Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivajakataya Ashtotara Shata. Ashta is a eight, and Ashtotara Shata. Shata is 100. So he wrote shatakas about the glories of Vrindavan, or 100 verses. But there's about, like, I don't know, maybe 13, 23 of these in the collection. So it's hundreds and hundreds of verses of the glories of Vrindavan. You know? And so he said, I was raised up in the opulent worship of Lakshmi and Narayan, but all this time, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the followers of Lord Chaitanya, they were drowning in Madhurya Ras. Vanchito Shmi, Vanchito Shmi, Vanchito Shmi. I was cheated, I was cheated, I was cheated. So he became a Gaudiya Vaishnava, giving up his Sri Sampradaya to follow Lord Chaitanya. And he wrote the beautiful poems about Lord Chaitanya and beautiful poems about Vrindavan. And he's described as an incarnation of Tunga Vidya. When you're seeing Radha Madhava and the Asta Sakis, she's all the way on our left, on Krishna's right side. Tunga means peak or apex, and Vidya means knowledge. So she's the apex of knowledge. You know? So these Vrindavan Dhamma Himamritas are written by Tunga Vidya, who is a fanatic about Vrindavan. He's a fanatic. And when you're actually in on the Vrajmandal Parikrama and sleeping on the ground and week after week traveling, these things become so intense, hearing about them. So I just did a little search in the file for Jamuna, and in Shataka number 3, I found these texts, which are very nice. And these are, of course, Kusha Krata Prabhu's translations, which are usually pretty dynamic. I mean, maybe sometimes some mistakes here and there, my experience, one of the most intense translators. He says, "I bow down, I bow before Vrindavan's Jamuna River, which is eternally splendid with a lotus of many jewels, which flows from an ocean of bliss, which is delightful with many other colorful, splendid flowers, which cannot be approached by the crowns of the three Vedas, and which is filled with the sounds of maddened bees and birds. Meditate on Vrindavan's Jamuna River, which is dear to Lord Hari, which flows with a great flood of transcendental bliss, which has shores studded with jewels, waves chanting the Samaveda, and swans, cranes, charandavas, datyuhas, and other birds chanting the Rig Veda, throwing a great burst of the laughter of Kamala Kairav and other kinds of lotus flowers on each other's bodies, closing their eyes as they splash water on each other's faces, diving into the water and lifting each other from it, and both claiming victory in battle. Two fair and dark splendors play in the Jamuna water. May the Jamuna waters, sweet as grape sugar milk, nectar." That must have been something to translate right there. "Where waters sweet as grape, sugar, milk, nectar, are filled with golden lotus buds and other flowers, where the shores are made of many jewels, where the water is wonderful with the splashing of playful, splendid jewel fish, where there is the wonderful glistening jewel staircase, where the shores are very beautiful with groves of many kinds of wonderful flower-filled trees and vines, and fragrant with camphor and splendid bakul trees, where, along the shores, are frightened does with wide open eyes, where there sweet fragrances of many splendid forests of kadamba and champaka trees are everywhere, where there is an abundance of pollen, flying birds, pleasant breezes, and a sweet splendor everywhere, where the forest groves are reflected in the deep waters, and where Sri Sri Radha Krishna's bliss increases, also increase the happiness of all of you." Sanskrit translators Kijat. "The Jamuna is decorated with many swans, cranes, karandavas. All directions are pleasant, with the fragrance of the new purandarikas and other lotus flowers. Bumblebees stay in the forests of kalaharas, utpalas, and pankajas, bumblebees, and other lotus flowers. The soft singing of the maddened bees enchants the ears of the entire world. How many splendid lakes, streams, wells, and ponds in this beautiful land of Vrindavan do not have their sweet waters anointed with cosmetic ointments left by Sri Sri Radha Krishna? How many young hills of jewels and gold have not been places of their wonderful pastimes? How much splendid beauty is not present in this very fragrant land of Vrindavan. And finally, I meditate on all of Vrindavan with its beasts, birds, forests, groves of trees, and flowering vines, hills, pleasant caves, pools, wells, ponds, streams, lakes, and jewel courtyards, as well as the Jamuna's shores. And everything there is enchanted by Radha Madhava's beauty and is blind with love for them. So very nice, you know, descriptions there for contemplation, meditation. And of course, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati says, because of this, people will be dying to learn Sanskrit, yeah, so on. So other comments here. One is that, let's see, Krishna's sanctity, Jamuna, yeah. Yeah, I still don't. It's interesting because it says they're non-different, but they are different in terms of sanctity. Yeah, in the Garga Samhita, which some people mention is never mentioned by Acharyas, but then Shivaram Swami has some citations to say, you know, it's bona fide. But anyway, there it's describing that when Krishna came to the material world. It describes also, I think it's from there, as I remember, how the Jamuna and the Ganga, they both come down and they go through the higher planetary systems with different names and they go through the middle planets. But when it comes to going down into Patala, the lower worlds, Jamuna turns back and goes back to the spiritual world. And then she says goodbye to her sister, Ganga, who then goes all the way down into the lower worlds like that, and then returns herself back to the spiritual world. I looked in Chaitanya Charitamrita, I couldn't find it, so I must have read it in Chaitanya Bhagavat. And Lord Chaitanya said, I have two mothers in Bengal, Sachi and the Ganga. You know? And so, of course, in his pastimes with Lord Chaitanya, he satisfied Jamuna Ganga. By playing in her, you know, for so much, all of his sporting pastimes, so many sporting pastimes. And so, who got more mercy, Jamuna or Ganga? Yeah, it's interesting. And let me see, all of these dialogues, Maharaj Pariksit to Sukadeva Goswami, Vidura to Maitreya, you know, the sages of Naimisharanya, they're all on the banks of rivers. You know, all these different conversations like that, Vyasadeva's meditations on the Bhagavatam, like that, Jamuna, Ganga. Yeah, every time before Lord Chaitanya would bathe in the Jamuna, whenever he saw her, he would chant one verse from the Padma Purana, which is, as you remember, it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I can remember it now. Vrishabhanu. Vrishabhanu Sutta? I can't remember. Yeah. Chidananda Bhanu. Chidananda Bhanu. Vrishabhanu Nandu. Paraprema Patri. Brahma Dravya Gatri. Bhaganam Lavitri. Jagakshema Datri. Pavitam Kuryanno. Chidananda Bhanu sits. Chidananda Sutta. Yeah. Chidananda Bhanu Vrishabhanu Sutta. O Jamuna, daughter of the sun god, I offer my obeisances to you. Yeah. Your all blissful spiritual waters give pleasure to the son of Maharaj Nanda. Kindly purify us of our simple reactions by your austerities. Chidananda Bhanu Vrishabhanu Sutta. Chidananda Bhanu, something like the Sutta. Paraprema Patri, Brahma Dravya Gatri, Aganam Lavitri, Jagakshema Datri, Pavitam Kuyano. Chidananda Bhanu, Sutta. It's a very nice verse. And she, of course, she's the sister of Jamaraj, Jama Jamuna. and both children of the sun god. So there's one day especially when all the Brijbasis and people mature, they all come to the bank of the Jamuna someplace, and they offer respects to her, and they ask her to talk with their brother about their accounts. They put in a good word for us with Muna. So, anything else about Jamuna? Oh, yeah. Okay, she's the liquid form of Vishakha Devi. Of course, it says that the most prominent gopi of Radha's direct expansions is Lalita and then Vishakha. So Vishakha, Jamuna, liquid form of Vishakha Devi. And of course, she has this pastime with Balaram. Balaram wants to go bathing in her waters with the other gopis, and then she thinks he's just a drunken guy and won't associate with him. But then he shows his power, and then she comes and pays her obeisance and says, "Oh my goodness, I forgot who you were. Please forgive me." So then Balaram forgives her, and they go diving in the waters and swimming. And Lord Balaram is transcendental intoxication. So Jamuna, of course, the glories are unlimited. But yes, there's also so much contamination. I think that the web page is called Save Jamuna, savejamuna.com. And if you go there, it's a petition you can sign. And they're collecting, you know, signatures and stuff for people to have the government of India stop diverting the water and stop contaminating it. I heard Prabhupada said there was a conscious effort by the materialistic government to make the water so contaminated it would discourage pilgrimage and stuff like that, because they wanted to make people progressive, industrialized. And then also these tests of the freezing the water before it becomes the sewage areas, the water forms crystals and there it forms globules, you know, so very contaminated. But still somehow or other, I would understand still, you know, it's very sanctified. It's still very purified, you know, somehow or other, by Krishna's mercy. As the Maharshpurika sat down there in the proper atmosphere, you know, to fill his mind and heart with the presence of the Ganga, and then prepare himself, you know, to become purified from all of his reactions and go back to Krishna's internal pastimes. So that's something that I think all of us, is that if things are proper, then we have all these activities. Okay, we become grihasthas, you know, because we're just lusty dogs and dog and dogettes, whatever. We want to enjoy sense gratification, food, music, whatever. Okay. Or else maybe we're 80%, you know, want to serve Krishna. We still have some desires like Kardama and Devahuti. Or maybe we're like Devaki and Vasudeva, we're pure devotees. But still we get involved in all these passionate grihastha activities, civilized activities, preaching, and so we need time, you know, to purify ourselves of these experiences like that, you know. And maybe it can happen in one moment, but why take the crash course? Better to, you know, have the advantage of, you know, systematically retiring. Prabhupada says that the physical energy in the body is finished at 50 years old. He said you can push it to 55, you know. So my experiencing that, like I was describing, in May we had this unbelievable intense program, and I came back really sick, you know, very sick. And all the different doctors, Ayurveda, homeopathy, whatever, you know, sympathy, they were all said, yeah, you're sick, you know, too much stress, you know. Some people were saying I had, basically fire coming out of my mouth, pitta. And I think the Ritviks were saying it was because I was blasting Prabhupada. the allopaths were saying a vitamin D, B deficiency. Ayurveda, the pitta, you know, it was just coming out of your throat and mouth like that and so on. So in any case, everybody, pretty much, it's just too much stress. Calm down, you know, don't try and be more than you are. So at 65 years old, a lot of us, you know, it's time to really, you know, my experience now is I'm really taking a much different diet because of Ayurveda, and it's very satisfying. It's a very peaceful diet. I want to do this. I got to, you know, I can write this. I alone can write this paper. Yeah, I could do it maybe better than other people, but to do that, then I have to go and eat some more passionate food to get energy in my body. But then I know, yeah, this is what's going to happen. This, you know, this inflammation in the mouth is going to come right back. You know? Old age is a good friend for a devotee. So it's naturally pushing us to start eating a more simple diet, keeping more simple, regulated service. And then I'll start to spend more time, you know, pick up the Krishna book and read two or three stories every day, you know, just chant all the time, you know, do 16 rounds of your beads and do, 48 rounds, you know, just when you're working, you know, chanting as you're doing different things like that, you know, do more rounds, you know. Then, and well, you know, we're escaping, we're running away from the sankirtan. Maybe Krishna wants us to do these things. But also naturally, I think for us, too, is we're not Prabhupada, and so we should really, you know, try to get purified of these things and get ready to reawaken our internal service, you know, because, you know, it's Krishna needs us in Goloka. He needs us. So we have to get ready to become purified to do that. Otherwise, we die in some kind of quasi-material consciousness and we take birth as Duryodhana in Krishna's pastimes or somebody like that. So that's my comprehension of the verse here. Okay? So anybody else have any comments, complaints, contributions?
Okay, I've unmuted everybody on start meeting. By the way, it's nice we have 31 devotees that came today. That's a record for us.
My goodness.
You were all attracted to giving your association, Maharaj.
I'm not sure about that.
Prabhu, is there anything anyone would like to ask Maharaj?
I have something. Vigav Dhamagra Das, Dandavats Maharaj.
Jai, same to you.
It's interesting, these two verses are translated as the Ganges, and then Prabhupada reveals in the purport that Jiva Goswami suggested it to the Jamuna. And in the previous verse, it's Amartya Nadyam, on the bank of the transcendental river. And in parenthesis, the Ganges or the Jamuna. So it's interesting that the translation comes out the Ganges. And then in this verse that you read this morning, it's also the Ganges is not mentioned in the word for word specifically, except in the verse, it's mentioned that Lord Shiva, as we know, the Ganges came from the lotus feet of the Lord onto the head of Shiva, and other demigods were purified by this river. So then you get the idea that the river they're talking about is the Ganges. So what's interesting is there's a place called Sukratal on the banks of the Ganges, about halfway between Haridwar and Delhi, about 86 kilometers from Delhi, which was Hastinapur, which was traditionally held to be the place where Sukadev spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam. And pilgrims come there from all over India to commemorate the recitation of Bhagavatam by Sukadev. Actually, the very name of the place probably indicates it has Sukadev's name in it. However, there's no temple established by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as there is at Namasharanya, the site where Suta Goswami recited the Bhagavatam later to the 60,000 rishis there. So, interesting, you know, that's not mentioned also.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, I just thought I'd had that.
Yeah, no, it is interesting. We're kind of, because we're trying to like you know, put our good foot forward to the academic community. We're publishing books, you know, on Indian philosophy, Indian history in general, and things like that. And actually our next project, we're going to take our time and do it slower, is actually trying to develop dialogue about the Phaedo, which is, of course, the last dialogue of Socrates, and then, you know, illuminate it in the light of the Bhagavat, look at it in terms of, you know, the Indian philosophy, the Bhagavatam. And it's the same thing, you know, because Socrates, he has warning of his death, you know. And I've heard Prabhupada said he was a nice boy, just didn't have a guru like that. But it is, it's like, in the response so far has been so nice. You know, so many regular academic scholars and so on, this feeling is that, yeah, we've, like, in the last, like, 20 years, you know, 30 years, we just lost it in terms of our roots. It's really gotten absorbed into the toys. You know, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, and all these movies are very exciting, but when they come to the actual conclusion, it's really boring. It's just stupid, you know. Oh, he had a kid, the kid was like him, Haribo. It's like, you know. Before, there was something a little bit more elevated, you know. And so there's this feeling that we have to get back to the image. You know, we have to experience it as they experienced it. Not just the actual content, but the actual image, you know, more than the actual content. And so reading all these histories and stuff like this is just, it's not so disturbing that it doesn't follow ABC, because we're trying to get the whole ambience and all the pieces, and then later on, maybe we can figure out why the ABC isn't that way, why we ended up with, you know, cat rather than tack. Again, because in the the one thing they have about the Saraswati doesn't exist anymore, because apparently just the earth just tilted, and so therefore the actual riverbed got removed. But if you do like satellite photography, then the actual riverbed is still there, and the water is flowing underground slowly. You know, it moves underground by gravity along that pathway. So there are things like that that before the, you know, location of these rivers, if the Ganga and the Jamuna were actually, you know, one river in their source, you know, which branched, and there's all kinds of, you know, different possibilities like that. You know, why geographically is talking about one or the other, you know, and maybe before it was the fact that the name Ganges meant, maybe it was just that, just a branch, you know, like that. The Gomati is called the Gomati Ganga. She flows right through Naimisharanya because the Gomati goes into the Ganga. So it's called Gomati Ganga. Yeah. And what they join together, don't they? Yeah, later on. Where is it? At Prayag, Tribeni. The Ganga, the Saraswati, and the Jamuna all join together at that point. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hari Bol, Balabhadra.
Hari Bol. I have two questions, actually, Maharaj.
Oh, my God.
The first one is that the Prabhupada says in the purport that generally it is said that the king took shelter on the bank of the Ganges. So my first question is, how is it that concept was born? I mean, if he took, if Srila Sivadasana's statement is correct, if he actually took shelter on the bank of the Jamuna, why would there be a story saying that he took shelter on the banks of the Ganges? How did that happen?
I don't know. That's the answer to your first question. I don't know.
And the second one is, later on in the purport, it says Krishna sanctified the Ganges for the beginning of his pastimes, and
I guess, I don't know, somebody's gone here. I'm gone, or... Haribo?
No, you're not gone. Yeah, you know, Skype just crashed.
Okay.
Skype crashed because there's, oh my God, a lot of people on it. About 20 people on it right now.
Okay,
so we're trying to reconnect.
It's reloading. It's interesting because I'm staying here. Pandava Vijay, our good disciple, came from Seattle to visit us here in Boise with the family and everything. And he actually works for Microsoft for telecommunications. And so he's telling us that Microsoft bought Skype, but WebEx and Start Meeting, everybody else. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to mute them. Just give me a second.
Okay. So, WebEx and everybody else, they have a lawsuit in with the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, that blocking the sale of Skype to Microsoft, because they say if they do that, then Microsoft will just drive them all out of business. So Microsoft is expecting to win in about 2 years, and then they'll take over and do all this, you know, making Skype just like WebEx and everybody else, Start Meeting, but super efficient. Because now, yeah, the way Skype works, it has one channel for everybody, so it collapses more often than Start Meeting, which only has one channel for everybody, rather than individual channels. Joy. But it's so nice to be in the association of devotees. Balabhadra, are you there again?
You know what, Maharaj, I'm going to have to unmute them. Can you just hold on 1 second? Sorry, because there's
hanging
like
on.
So much noise going on there.
Maharaj, while we're waiting.
Okay.
I think the answer to that first question by Balabhadra.
Oh, yeah, please.
Is there is a place traditionally held, you know, on the banks of the Ganges for that, you know, telling of the Bhagavatam. So when Prabhupada said generally.
Yeah.
You know?
But do you know why it was picked out like that? Or is there any legend about history about why it was some sage or somebody, some rishi said, oh, this is where it was or something?
Well, they even have a tree there that some sage, brought back to health that's supposed to be 5,100 years old.
Oh, die.
Sight, you know, and, you know, I don't know the background exactly, but traditionally held place for that event. And there's temples there. It's a small place.
Yeah. I was looking at the history of India on the Wikipedia and Britannica, and it's so incredible. I think there's no place in the world. Peru has some history going back like that, like, you know, 10,000 years. Tools they carve and date back to 100,000 BC and stuff like that. But it's nothing like India. The whole area of India, there's this one place after another where they were like, you know, what you call prehistoric man tools or whatever. But at least there's just so much evidence of old cultures. Old. Even our friend Dr. Bandapajaya, a big historian, he was saying that in Europe there's enough history to kind of put it in order, but he said in India there's too much. And it's just one temple was built upon another temple. It is a joke. There's one place in Punjab, every time it rains you just walk out and pick up artifacts. It's a joke, but it's not completely a joke, because it washes away something, and here's this thing coming down like coins, and you know, it's just India is just built upon heritage. You know, it's a whole different place. Yeah. Okay. So any more questions, comments here then?
Yeah. I'll make a comment, just kind of something interesting here. The very last Prabhupada's report, he says, let me back up a little bit more. There's no difference between the Ganges and the Jamuna, but when the water of the Ganges is sanctified 100 times, it is called the Jamuna. Similarly, it is said in the scriptures that 1,000 names of Vishnu is equal to one name of Rama, and three names of Rama is equal to one name of Krishna. Hold on a second. Hey, guys, someone up. Could you keep down for a second? So I was just thinking that this sort of falls in that category of something we really can't take so much literally. Because we know that it's kind of like comparing something that is infinite to something that is two times infinite or three times infinite. You know, one really doesn't diminish the infinite quality or nature of the other. I mean, the Ganges is used in the Upadeshamrita, for example, when it's talking about the pure devotee, that we should never, ever see, no matter how infirm or how diseased or how deformed the body of a pure devotee is, it's described as just like the Ganges. And one will, during the rainy season, the Ganges will become full of foam and bubbles and mud and so on. But it says that one who's advanced in spiritual understanding, no matter what the condition of the Ganges is, he will bathe in that water. It's so comparing the Ganges to the Jamuna, well, I don't know if we can actually understand. No, I guess we can't take this too literally. That's 100 times more sanctified. I mean, the Ganges, which could, if we didn't read it right, imply that the Ganges isn't completely sanctified because it's more sanctified. Anyway, I think my point is we're falling into that category of comparing, you know, eternity and infinity to infinity squared.
It's interesting, it's in mathematics. It's interesting because I was thinking that in mathematics, when we were studying that, because you have like the set of all positive numbers, it's infinite, right? Okay. But then you have the set of all positive and negative numbers. So they're both infinite, but they use the term, they're not co-numerous. You can't match them up like that, you know? So it's like, then what you're saying, like, yeah, it's true, you know, they're both perfect, but then for a certain functionality, if you're going to try and match things up or do something this and that, but in terms of a certain kind of functionality or activity you're trying to do, yeah, then one is useful for this and one is useful for that. It's a difference in a different dimension like that. You know, it's a very nice point. Also, I was going to mention this too, because this citation about Rama and as far as I know, it's from the Shanti Parva of the Mahabharata. It's actually where Bhishma Dev is lying in the bed of arrows and he gives all these instructions on Varna Ashram to Yudhisthira, and he finishes off with the Vishnu Sahasranam. And after chanting the whole thing, then he says, but this whole thing can be accomplished by if one chants the name of Rama three times, you know. And that can be accomplished if one says the name of Krishna one time, you know. But somebody told us that it kind of says if you can't chant the Vishnu Sahasranam, then you can. So you're saying, you know, we shouldn't minimize, again, we shouldn't minimize the Vishnu Sahasranam. But it's more like if you can't do it, then take shelter of Ram, and maybe considering our condition, we have to do that, you know. But yes, wonderful point. You know, we shouldn't minimize. And then again, Lord Chaitanya played in the Ganga more than he played in Jamuna. So, my goodness, God bless you.
Maharaj.
Yeah.
Harsh wrote something. I don't know if he can speak or not, but I can read what he just said. He said,
okay,
according to historians, Hastinapur is Meerut, which is on Ganges. Indraprastha is Delhi, which is on the Yamuna.
Yeah. Yeah, Meerut. Meerut's much more, more east. Wow. Okay. So we're getting about the very last part of this preface. And everything is getting the place. Next, I guess, the sages will show up, and they'll discuss what to do. Then it will describe Sukadeva Swami, what kind of padding on down the path with no clothes on, being followed by simple ladies and street boys. And then the whole thing is actually there. Maharaj Parikit will give very, very beautiful prayers of reception, put himself in a very humble attitude. The sages will receive Sukadeva Goswami according to their rank and position. And he'll send the Vyasa-san, Digambar. And at that point, Maharaj Parikit will ask one question, basically. What is the duty of a man during his life, and especially the time of death? And they said, that's what we're trying to bring out and stimulate good dialogue in Western culture, to think about this again in terms of Socrates, the Phaedo. And so maybe anybody wants to participate, we'll be generating more like discussions. And it's actually quite interesting, this is the dialogue. The first, our topic, first topic is our symposium in September. And we have a call for papers. We'll probably put that up on the Education Ministry webpage. And the title is The Phaedo, How to Live, How to Die, and in comparisons with different cultures like that. Because also Christians and everybody else, it's the same thing, you know. What is the purpose of ethics and morality? You know, it's really, a lot of it is this point, is to live the proper life for the moment of death, you know. So anyway, thanks to everybody.
Maharaj, can I just ask one quick question?
Sure, yeah, please.
Oh, just that I was trying to go through a philosophy book one devotee had lent me. And when you read at least the excerpts that they give in the book, you know, as far as Plato and Socrates, you know, I never studied philosophy, but when I read those, I can understand, you know, what they're saying, and I think it's very close to Veda culture, you know, understanding what is Brahman, what is spirit, what am I, and what is the purpose of life. But then when it gets into more modern philosophers, I don't know if I'm just dull, or is it that modern philosophers are much more speculative and harder to understand what they are saying?
I've heard Prabhupada said Socrates was the last honest man in Western philosophy, and they killed him. You know? And I've also read one philosopher, he says all of Western philosophy is a footnote to Socrates. And so I think it's many people, they do it. Because see, for some of them, they really get into this, that's how they judge it. One of our, on this project, I contacted Dr. David Long, our friend from Sacramento State University, and I'm trying to get some, you know, lowdown on some people, what their position is, how can we approach them. And he was laughing, and he said, well, that guy is like most of them. He said, most professional philosophers don't know they have a body below their neck, like that. And so all of their, they're just really heavy gyanis. And in that sense, sometimes they drink wine at their conventions and stuff like that. But a lot of times they are like, you know, strict intellectuals. But that's it. The whole thing is pride. You know, who can come up with better subtle intellectual things? And Newton and Leibniz had this hellish emotional war, you know, going back and forth over who was the smartest. You know, and that's kind of it. I think it just really kind of they lost. You know, the thing about what is the purpose of, you know, but the time of death, first off, becoming immortal. So yeah, I think, you know, as far as I know, what I hear, you're it's correct. Prabhupada and everybody else says it. It was just the Greeks, and after that, people really fell into a lot of speculation. Not everybody, you know, but a lot of speculation. At least with the Cartesian split, the philosophers went one way, the gyanis, and then the devotees went the other way with the church. So then you had the, you know, religion without philosophy. So it started to get its problems like that. But amongst those, amongst the monotheistic philosophers in the church, there are still some very nice sentiments. And Prabhupada appreciated St. Francis and others like that. Yeah. But that's the kind of thing we're trying to do. You know, there are people, you know, in Western culture. We were invited to do a program at Stanford just before we came here. And I just said, okay, I can't kill myself making a new program. So I just suggested the Phaedo thing. And some very respectable people came. It was actually one of the heaviest audience I've ever been in front of. in terms of Western intellectuals and stuff like that, because the Indian graduate students, they advertised it well, and we had some really good discussions. They were bringing up points about the position of the Phaedo, and they were listening, you know, to the, I was comparing it to Suda Goswami and the sages, and afterwards we sold the books. So off to a good start. Maybe we'll see a revolution within our lifetime.
Maharaj.
Yeah.
Luciano has one question, if you can just stay
okay.
And answer one more question.
Yeah, then I should go, because now we're supposed to go see the Mormons at 12:30. But I got but 5 more minutes. Luciano.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was just wondering on why the Yamuna River is more sanctified than the Ganges. As far as my understanding, the Ganges trickles down from the Karana Ocean.
Yeah, it, so when Vamanadev, you know, was taking his three big steps, the story is no, that he punched a hole in the covering of the universe, and it came in. But it, as I understand, it comes in from the lotus feet of Vishnu, and whereas the Jamuna is sanctified by the lotus feet of Krishna, and that's the difference. So Krishna, you know, is more full manifestation of the Purusha than the Mahavishnu, like that.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, Prabhu was making the point, you know, from our point of view, it's like, you know, the infinity square and the infinity cube. Just whenever you get a chance to bathe in either one, do it. Yeah. Maybe no problem in that.
Haribo.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Just one quick comment. I know there's this book out on philosophers called Dialectical Spiritualism. I think where Prabhupada discusses different philosophers.
No, the thing with that is they stopped publishing it because, as far as I understand, that Hayagriva and Shyamasundara, that they were taking the philosophers, they would extract the ideas. And they presented them to Prabhupada. And that, you know, devotees now who are becoming more sophisticated in this say that really many times what they presented is not the idea, you know, of those philosophers. And therefore, you know, it doesn't look so good for us. Here we are presenting this, and it shows an immature idea. So they stopped publishing it. But the very last dialogue, last philosopher they present is Carl Jung. And usually, probably most of these guys, he says, no, this is wrong, no, you know. But with Jung, he's going ahead and saying, that's correct. Then he says, oh, that's not correct. Then Shyamasundara explains a little more, and he said, well, from that perspective, yes, it's true, you know. So finally, he finishes off, and Shyamasundara says, well, Prabhupada, he's the last one. And Prabhupada says, of all of them, he appears to have the most sense, like that. So it really, to Carl Jung, I think that for devotees, he's worth reading, because he has a lot of stuff, which is he glorifies India and China. He visited there. He has many things which are very, like, what's the word, like sympathetic, you know, in terms of our perspective and culture. And he's trying to understand it, and he has some good ideas. And it's a very active school of psychology. It's not a mainline school, but it's very active and it's very respected. If you need psychotherapy, Jungian psychology may be a very good place to go, you know, for some professional help. They use drawings and things like that. So a very good book to read is called if you look on Amazon, it's called the Tavistock, T-A-V-I, Tavistock. Okay, one motorcycle going by. Tavistock lectures, and there are a series of lectures he gave at the Tavistock Foundation. And he was illustrating them from case studies, so they're very interesting. And he just to give a quick quote, you know, he says, for example, he said, "You modern doctors and people think that these ancient Indian and Chinese sages were fools." He said, "They weren't the fools; we are the fools." He said, "In terms of introspection and this kind of things, they're so much more advanced than us, and we're just beginning to figure out." The kind of things that they knew as commonplace people. He said, in terms of psychology, Europe is a peninsula, a peninsula of Asia. You know? And he said, I don't know if there's a God or not. He said, I'll be honest, but it's something every psychiatrist, psychologist should investigate. But right now, he said, I don't know if there's a God or not, but I do know that if you don't believe in God, you'll go crazy. So he's a very useful fellow in terms of, like, you know, approaching Western people and trying to get our ideas, so that basically, so they have enough faith, they'll read Prabhupada's books. That's all we're trying to do. Okay, thank you all very much.
And thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you so much for your association.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Glad to see you, Prabhupada.
Yeah.